I'm Maya Chupkov, and I'm a woman who stutters. Welcome to Proud Stutter, a show about stuttering and embracing verbal diversity in an effort to change how we talk about it, one conversation at a time. Welcome back to Proud Stutter. I'm your host, Maya Chupkov. Today we have a very special human who I recently met at a friend's conference here in the Bay Area. We have Sam, who's a talk therapist based in the Bay Area. She's also a person who stutters. Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to speak with you because, you know, I feel like the moment you picked me up to drive me to the friend's conference, I just loved your energy, and it was really fascinating talking to you about like your job being a talk therapist and how that, you know, can kind of find its way, your perspective as a person who stutters into your practice. So I always like to start kind of from the beginning and talking about like what was it like for you growing up. Did you always have a stutter? Like, how was it for you in early childhood?
So, okay, early childhood. I actually don't remember stuttering until I was about seven. And that, even then, it wasn't a really clear experience for me. I remember having to give speeches in school. Oh my God, what a nightmare. Giving speeches in front of the class as like an 8-year old, but I didn't quite know what was going on. Like, what, I mean, it was scary for everybody, but it was unsettling in a different way, I think, for me, because I just didn't know like why I couldn't say certain things, but I knew that it was not received well. It was met with confusion and different looks and just different things that the feedback was not positive. So I quickly learned to really mask and hide it. And I would say that around 12, 13, 14 was when I really like came close to recognizing that I had a stutter. I often say that I stutter. I don't even call it a stutter because it feels like a ongoing experience, not something that I possess. But yeah, that it was very confusing, and it was not until I went to an intensive treatment program for stuttering that I actually came to realize what it was. And I was 15 when I went.
And after you came back from that intensive, what was that like? Like, did you feel like it helped? Did it change your relationship with your stutter?
You know, that's a really good question, because I think that a lot of the things that were taught in that program have stayed with me in a positive way. And I'm thinking what to convey here. I was 15. I was so young. And at the time, my group was mostly teenagers, which was sort of an anomaly at the time. Like they only really did adult groups, I think. This was the first one that was mostly young people. And it helped, and it was also like it couldn't help but not convey the message that fluency was better. There was just no way around it at the time. It was 2001. There was just, we didn't, I don't know, maybe I'm making excuses, but like everything was still so normative driven back then, that that message really still permeated things. So even though there was a lot of acceptance woven in to everything, it was still like the main message was fluency, and that was really hard to recover from, really, to like unlearn in my later 20s and so forth.
So you're a talk therapist. I'm wondering, like, what made you want to get into that field? Were you ever considering like speech, being a speech language pathologist? Like, what was kind of that, that pull for you? Like,
yeah, great question. And I'm glad that you, differentiated talk therapists, psychotherapists from speech language pathologists, because definitely different in that I felt like if I had become a speech therapist, I would have had sort of this like maybe a cloak or some sort of like thing to lean on, like, well, this is what I do, and I stutter and I treat stuttering, like, I, and not to say that it's any easier, but I thought about it and I thought, I think I'm just wanting to do that because it would be easier, and for me, I didn't want to do something just because it would be easier. So your question was what led me to want to do the work of psychotherapy. Well, I think because of the spaces I was in, I was being in recovery. I am in a lot of spaces where people talk about their problems, and not many of them stutter. I mean, maybe one or two here or there, but that's not the majority. So I came to realize that people are struggling with a lot of different things, and most of it stems from this inability to really be who we are, and this learned masking that takes place. And I thought, wow, like, that's so similar to the experience of stuttering. Maybe there's more, maybe I'm not alone in this. Maybe there's more to it. Like, I just became so interested in exploring that with people beyond my own experience, but with this thing that we could really, that we really shared in common, this desire for authenticity.
And what's it like for you being a talk therapist? Do you find that having a stutter has really helped you connect more with your clients?
Stuttering has been my greatest teacher in my life. It has helped me connect with people in general, and it has forced me to embody who I am, whoever that is. It's evolving and changing every day, but embody who I am and share that with people. So in that regard, yes, I am not one of those therapists where I'm like two completely different people in my work and my social life, or in my work, yeah, and in my social life or personal life. I'm me, and people get to experience that, I think, because partly because of stuttering. It's not something that I hide much of the time. I think for any covert stutterer that there is always the temptation to do that or to mitigate it. But for me, I don't really lean on that anymore because it was a prison that I don't ever want to go back to. this fear of stuttering.
Ooh, yeah, that made me have goosebumps a little bit, because yeah, I remember that feeling of fear ahead of every time I stutter, and I just feel like I am having that less and less ever since I started talking about it more. So, but yeah, I wish I was as open about other things in my life than stuttering. I feel like stuttering was for so long such a deep-seated thing that I just constantly avoided. And now I feel like it's totally shifted, and now it's like something that is just there. It's kind of a more neutral thing for me, although there are some moments when I hear about other people's stories and I kind of go back to that like feeling of like, wow, like that deep connection to like what they're saying. But yeah, I kind of wish I was more open about some of the other things, and maybe stuttering, that thing I went through with stuttering, can help me in other parts of my life too.
Yeah, I agree that it can really be a portal for, I said authenticity already, but I don't know if there's a better word for it.
Your day-to-day, like, what does your day-to-day look like? I know, like, for people who stutter, and I talk to a lot of people who stutter, and when they have jobs where they're, like, talking a lot, it can really make them tired at the end of the day, just because sometimes for people, getting through a lot of conversations can be, like, taxing on your body. So I'm wondering, like, how, if like what that experience is for you, having a job where you're like talking a lot.
yeah well, where do I begin? So I firmly believe that we are all in recovery from something, everybody. And not everybody has community for that. But I, to answer your question, and it is available to everybody. And when I say recovery from something, I mean even if it's shame over some part of ourselves, family trauma, whatever it is, some innate difference in us that makes us feel unaccepted. That's what I mean. And so for me, stuttering took a huge toll on my nervous system for a very long time. I think that's a shared experience for people who stutter. Like, physically, it takes a toll. Even when I didn't realize it, it did. The fight or flight response was pretty constant. And part of my recovery journey, I would say, has been getting to a place of regulation where I feel either calm, or I feel like calm is accessible all of the time. Even when I'm activated, I never feel out of control. And that has been a gift of just the last 10 years of my communities, my practices. I meditate, I run a lot. I'm a long distance runner. I have a spiritual life, different from organized religion, but if you're a part of organized religion, great. Also, just wanted to make that delineation, just to have this like understanding that I don't have to be in control of everything. Like, some things have been taken care of by the flow of the universe. And so that's what I mean personally as having a spiritual life, and starting my day with journaling and meditating, or if I don't feel like that's accessible because my thoughts are too scattered, just sitting on the couch and taking a few deep breaths, not just running out the door and starting my day. That for me has really been a huge part of developing like a way of living that adds to this calm that has not been taught to me. It wasn't taught to me.
I love that. That I feel like I need to do more of that in my mornings, because usually I'm just like, I wake up and I start working and it's like not healthy. Although I do have a personal trainer now that like has changed my life. Like I feel so like physically strong, and that's contributed to being mentally strong. So I feel like the physical activity has really helped, and I feel like there's just a few more improvements I have to make. And I think starting off my day in such a way is probably something I should tackle next. So
I'm glad we're talking about this, because sometimes I'll talk about stuttering and like not even get close to talking about this, and it's all related. Like we as humans, we need sunlight, we need water, we need movement, and it's not about fluency. It's about a sense of calm in the body and a sense of like nervous system regulation. And for me, that had eluded me for so long, that to have that now is like, actually, can I share an example or like a quick story?
Yeah.
So you said day to day. So literally this morning I went to get a coffee and had a feeling. I had a feeling, and the feeling was probably based in the fact that I knew I was going to try to avoid stuttering on this word. I was ordering a mocha, and it's one of those words that like may never come out, is how it feels. It always does, but sometimes it feels like it may never come out. So instead of, usually I'll go right into it, but this time I didn't, and I just sort of paused and sort of gathered up some momentum to say it, and it came out, and the person behind the counter said something to the effect of, "Oh wow, you were so thoughtful there for a moment," like commenting on my pause. And just like reflexively, I said, "Oh, actually, I stutter, and that word is really hard for me to say. So that's what was happening." And he said, "Oh," and that was it. And it made the rest of the interaction a little bit easier. But I feel really grateful that that is accessible to me now. In fact, I wish what I had done, and I've done this before, but I wish what I had done was to say before I even said it, like, "Hey, I stutter. It's going to take me a minute to say this word," and then say it however comes out. But like, that's what's available to me now, and that's what I want everyone who stutters, or even doesn't stutter, but like has other things like this, that they feel like they can sort of recruit their fellow humans to help them when they need it, because that's what we get to learn when we talk about these things and become vulnerable.
It's such a simple, it's simple, but also like very hard, and it's like you kind of have to learn those tools, and I like how you framed it as like that's what was accessible to me. Because yeah, I think a lot of these tools are something that we have to learn. It's not like intuitive, and I feel like a lot of people may not know that that's something you can do, you know?
Right.
So, you know, yeah.
Just yeah. Like people who don't stutter might not know that they can ask for help for anything. And if someone can't help, ask someone else, because someone will say, yes, how can I help? But it takes practice. We're definitely not taught this.
No. you mentioned unmasking, and so I'd love if you can talk about the process you have of unmasking and how that shows up like in your life and in your work.
Yeah, I think being a covert stutterer, which for anyone who might not know, is when people who stutter do different tricks and strategies to hide the fact that they stutter, and it can look all different ways. It can look like word switching. It can look like silence. It can look like acting like I'm thinking. It can look all different ways. So having been an expert at that, and then over the years, sort of letting that shed, letting that go, some or organically, and some through speech therapy tools like voluntary stuttering or prolongations, things that were just like really ingrained into my mind when I was really young, they do help mitigate the severity of blocks for me. So letting go of covert stuttering has looked like stuttering more. And in that process, I'm unmasking, I'm taking off this mask of I don't stutter. The mask is I don't stutter. The mask is you can't really see me, because if you see me, you might think that I'm not smart, can't read, don't know what I want to say, aren't sure of myself, have low self-esteem, which the irony of stuttering is that sometimes the things that we fear come true as a result of hiding. So we don't want to be perceived as anxious or having low self-esteem, and then we end up anxious with low self-esteem. So this process of unmasking also takes a lot of support and a lot of self-care and support from others when that self-care is not yet accessible to us, but both in practice, both physical practices, and therapeutic practices of just giving ourselves that reinforcement of worthiness and love. I mean, I could talk about this forever, all of the ways that we do that. But my point is we need to find ways to reiterate that we are lovable, because we're becoming very vulnerable in this process.
We talked a little bit earlier about you having a birthday coming up. How you're really, you know, how that birthday really ties into really being, you know, your authentic self. So can you talk about this milestone and what it's taken you to get to the point where you're like, you know what, I don't care?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a Libra, and I'm turning 40 in October, and I figure it's as good a milestone as any to really officially stop giving a fuck. You might have to beep that out, but it's okay. Yeah, definitely have spent way too long organizing who I am around what other people think of me. And I think a lot of us do that, and I don't want to do that anymore. And there's a lot of mixed messaging around this. And this is not to say that, you know, I'm starting this now when I turn 40. I just, it dawned on me that I'm finally like fully embodying this, or close to fully, because I am human, but close to fully embodying this way of being that was just not available to me for a long time. And I guess it's sort of an age where, for whatever reason, it feels to me a little like now or never. It's never too late, but I'm also like, now is good. Like, I've had enough time to consider basically what other people think of me. I mean, I keep coming back to that, but I think it's such a permeating theme in our society for so many people, of like, if I focus too much on myself, I'll be seen as selfish, or if I don't care what anyone thinks of me, then I'll look a certain way, which is like the same toxic cycle of caring what others think of me. And it's not in like a negative way. It's in like an empowering way that I've been feeling this. And it's uncomfortable sometimes because, like I said before, we're really not taught this stuff. We're really not taught this stuff. So it's been an adventure, and I'm still on it.
And what can you give an example of, like, what that looks like? Like, I know you talked about it a little bit, but I'm curious, because for me, I feel like I'm so hyper aware of like people's perceptions and like energy and stuff. And I think it's just because since I was little, my parents have like always put me in like, you know, workshops and things where you're talking about like your feelings, and like they just like, I just built up this hyper awareness since I was like really young. And so I've just always been really aware of people's energy and body language and how people are feeling.
Are you sure that's not because you're a person that stutters? Because I always,
it could be. Yeah, yeah, no, I definitely feel like it's fueled that more. But like, it also can be frustrating because I feel like I'm always like constantly aware of like, yeah, what like other people's reaction to me and like things like that. And sometimes it gets in the way of me, you know, being my authentic self. And I'm just like, but it's like I can read the room, you know, like if there's like a sad room and I want to celebrate a big milestone, I won't, you know, like things like that's like not, probably maybe not the best example, but yeah, I just feel like I'm constantly having to like assess the energy of wherever I'm at and just adapt.
Yeah. Well, I can think of a few examples. A personal example would be like if I'm feeling socially drained and I don't have the bandwidth to talk to someone, or make plans with someone, but, or even in more real time, like literally like making small talk or having a conversation with someone, I don't feel bad about not engaging in that sort of thing anymore. And there are polite, tactful ways to do this. Not that that even has to be the case. But what I mean is that we can honor our own needs, even if other people don't like it or it disappoints other people. And the way that I have come to accept and be in that feeling more, because again, we're not taught to disappoint others. Like, we're just not, we're taught to avoid it at all costs. So the way that I have gotten good at disappointing people, if I need to honor myself, is that time with myself in meditation, or just in quiet time, or running, or going for walks. Like, it's the same way that you would like get to know someone that you wanted to be in a closer relationship with, whether a friend or even like a small child, like however you would let them know that they're safe and show up in that way is the way that I've learned to regard myself. And then that translates in those moments, even if I do feel a little bit like, ooh, this is awkward. I'm not supposed to do this. I can, like, it doesn't last long. That feeling is fleeting.
Man, that just, yeah, you just really made me think of, I had never really thought of it that way before, of like, you kind of have to work on the relationship with yourself as much as with others. So yeah, that's amazing.
And it translates to the bigger things too. Like, it's not professional to stutter, and those toxic memes that kick around in my head sometimes, especially as I started a business speaking for a living, I grappled with that. What will clients think? What they'll think is that stuttering makes me who I am. It's an asset. I want to work with people who are drawn to me. It's not like they're working with me despite stuttering. They're working with me because of stuttering. They may not know it, but they are, because it makes me.
Yeah, if everyone who stutters could approach like a job interview in that way, that like showing that your stutter actually makes you, you know, is an asset, like, I feel like that would be such a powerful like shift in, like, because I know like interviews are some of the most common like stress points for people who stutter, and I think reframing it in that way can be really powerful. Yeah, so that's what made me think of that. I was wondering if you had anything else you wanted to share before we ended the interview.
I actually do. I have one metaphor that just came to mind, and this makes sense because I'm big into the ocean and constantly coming up with life metaphors that have to do with the ocean. But I just thought of this, and it's that, have you ever gone into really cold water in the ocean and just like done it really slowly and not had a good time because it's so cold and it just hurts and feels bad and you're just like drawing it out? For me, openly stuttering is like diving into that cold water. It's still a shock. It's still like, oh my God, but it doesn't last long. And it's the mindset that it takes to decide I'm diving in now. It's not even the diving in. It's the I'm going to dive in now and it's going to be okay. And then we dive in and the experience becomes easier. The more you dive into the cold water, the more it becomes easier to do it because you know that it's going to be okay. And that's been what it's been like. The more I open myself up and can be vulnerable with people, I have a different experience of stuttering. I don't struggle as much when I speak. I still stutter, but it's not a struggle like it was. It's not scary. It's just me.
Aww, I think that's lovely, and that's such a great way to end. So, Sam, thank you so much. This was a wonderful conversation. It was so nice to have you on Proud Stutter.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of Proud Stutter. This episode of Proud Stutter was produced and edited by me, Maya Chupkov. Our music was composed by Augusto Deniz, and our artwork by Mara Ezekiel and Noah Chupkov. If you have an idea or want to be part of a future episode, visit us at www.proudstutter.com. And if you like the show, you can leave us a review wherever you are listening to this podcast. Want to leave us a voicemail? Check out our show notes for the number to call in. More importantly, tell your friends to listen too. Until we meet again, thanks for listening. Be proud and be you.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain-rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on pristine exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.